We are back with Street Heat in the studios. Joining me is our Lloyd Carter, water guru, and Steve Hayes, another water guru. The subject, obviously, is water. What's going on? What about the Delta smelt? What about the so-called drought? What is the real information about? Well, actually, what's the truth? Lloyd, my first question to you is going to be, what do the Delta smelt, Union Carbide, and Philip Morris have in common?
Well, I think what they all have in common is a public relations firm. I assume that's what you're referring
to.
Named Burson Marsteller, who I believe has been involved in the California Latino Water Coalition and the Fryant Water Users Authority for several years. And they are one of the most notorious public relations firms in the world, one of the largest in the world. Past clients include Blackwater, the folks that gave us Three Mile Island, African dictators, the people that Union Carbide. We had the Bhopal incident in India 20 years ago. And I go into this a little bit, by the way, to put in a plug for the Fresno Community Alliance.
Exactly.
I have an article on there that talks about their involvement in the water war here in Central California, which is coming out on Tuesday, and then it'll be posted on my website shortly thereafter at lloydgcarter.com.
And it actually is, this is just part one of your
part one. The second part will look at some of the players in the California Latino Water Coalition, which people tell me is funded and financed by growers on the east side and the west side of the valley. And Paul Rodriguez is the head of that group. So anyway, that will be part two next month.
Excellent. And Steve Hayes also, Steve, you will have an article in this month's Community Alliance talking about restoring the Tulare Lake, which is a wonderful idea whose time has come.
Well, thank you, Jean. It's good to be here. And when talking about Tulare Lake as an opportunity, a lot of times it's called the Phantom Lake. You know, when you look out in that great expanse of the historic Tulare Lake Basin, you see a mirage of water, and we have a great opportunity to look at the environmental benefits as well as some of the financial costs associated with it, and come up with an alternative to another massive dam being built on the San Joaquin River and try to break that tradition.
Right. It would seem like the most logical thing, but will it? Logic, I guess, is a thing of the past when it comes to water and California.
Here in the Central Valley.
Especially in the Central Valley. What, you know, what do you guys want the public to know, setting it straight, first and foremost, about this so-called water crisis? What's the word?
Well, maybe we can give the listeners a quick update on what's been going on the last few months. Of course, this is the third dry year in a row. There have been significant cutbacks of water deliveries from the Delta to the west side of the valley. The San Joaquin River system, although Millerton Lake is full to the brim right now, I'm told that Class 1 water deliveries in the Fryant unit are only going to be about 85 or 90% of normal. And so there's been building a groundswell over the last few months from agricultural interests, who want the government to, quote, turn on the pumps at the Delta, that they've been shut down, at least in part due to a court order on the Delta smelt, which is a tiny fish that's on the threatened list of the Endangered Species Act, both state and federal. Now, there have been a couple of significant public events here in the last few weeks, one being the March for Water from Mendota to the San Luis Reservoir, which was in mid-April. And then early last week, a bunch of farmers put some tractors out on Interstate 5 as part of a protest, which tragically led to a serious accident in which a trucker was critically injured. And then, of course, this coming Sunday, the Secretary of Interior has agreed to come to Fresno to talk about the water supply situation. And then on next Wednesday, We are having there. Ray Appleton of KMJ said today he thought there would be 10,000 people will show up at Fresno City Hall next Wednesday, July 1st, at which time they'll hold a rally, and then my sources tell me they'll be marching to the federal building where they plan to pull some kind of a stunt, which I'm told may involve some civil disobedience and probably some people deliberately trying to get themselves arrested. Steve, anything you want to add to that, what's been happening lately?
Well, it's just amazing over the last number of years, the frequency and the increase in the volatility as it relates to water, with 3 years of back-to-back dry years or what would be considered below average rainfall or precipitation in the area. The fact that the Delta is near collapse as it relates to biologically. And I think that I've been out in Mendota. I saw them launch the march for water. I was at San Luis Reservoir. And, you know, everything that's being discussed, and obviously it's from the perspective of the San Joaquin Valley. But if you look at the Central Valley, there are other farm workers, other farmers, other farming communities up in the Sacramento Valley and in the Delta as well. And this whole argument about fish versus people, I think, is a false argument. Up in the Delta smelt means a lot to the farming operations up there. It's hard to believe that farmers are in support of protection of the Delta smelt and the sensitive environment of the Delta.
Right. Well, isn't it true that the Delta smelt, if you know, if they're there in vast numbers, will provide food for the other fish, hopefully, assuming that the other fish will be able to come upstream?
Well, yeah, let me take a shot at that,
sure.
Steve. First of all, the Delta smelt is only one of a number of fish species. All you hear about in Fresno is the Delta smelt, which is referred to as a bait fish and as a minnow. And, of course, when you knock out any part of the food chain, that affects what happens up the line. Now, what I'd like to talk about is salmon and steelhead and sturgeon and killer whales. You don't hear much discussion about salmon around here. The commercial salmon industry in California has been out of business for 2 years. One of the principal reasons, not the sole reason, but one of the principal reasons is massive diversions of water out of the Delta. So what we're really talking about, not only is it one of the great biological estuaries in the world, the Bay Delta system, but it also provides livelihood for thousands of people in commercial fishing, and there is a lot of economic value in recreational salmon fishing and other types of fishing. I'm told the killer whales now, there used to be thousands and thousands on the California coast, and now we're down to 85. So the problem is complex, not to minimize the problems of farmers, but the water of California belongs to all the people. And, you know, what you don't hear in Fresno is how did the Delta farmers feel about going on. They farm 500,000 acres of land in the Delta. How about the Trinity River Indians? I've never seen a story about the Trinity River Indians on local TV or in the Fresno Bee.
Right.
The commercial salmon industry is invisible in Fresno. So there are other players at the table. Steve, you want to add to that?
Oh, absolutely. Lloyd is correct. I've had the opportunity, because I've been involved with a program, statewide program, is called the CalFed Bay Delta Program, and in particular in the upper San Joaquin River. So I've had an opportunity to look at water resources from the source to its place of use throughout the state of California, but more specifically here in the San Joaquin Valley. And there's, you know, this push for a traditional approach towards storage, surface storage, massive dams, canal systems such as peripheral canal, and water as far as more water. Give us more water. If you give us more water, then all our problems will be solved. What we have a great opportunity to do here in the valley is to look at how we use water, and are there better or effective or more efficient approaches to water use? And I think that's where the opportunities are for our struggling rural farming communities, the fact that we have high unemployment. What are the opportunities to look at some new technologies that could be applied in agriculture or in our urban areas and create jobs, you know, meaningful jobs there in those struggling communities? And as Lloyd alluded to, under the state constitution, Lloyd, it's Article 10, Section 2, the water belongs to all the people of the state of California. So one of the aspects about this, especially on the west side, is they're saying, give us our water. No, that's the people of the state of California's water, and we have the right to assure that that water will be used for the highest and best use, you know, beneficial use. If you look at the whole state, what would be the impact outside of the Delta if that water was to be you know, sent south into the west side through those massive pumps.
Yeah. And doesn't, what is it, 80 or 81% of our water goes for agriculture? Is that,
well,
is that correct?
Well, you have to be very careful because the agricultural community would tell you half of the water that falls on California is going for the environment. So, but what I say is of the water that we have developed and store, river water in California that we store behind dams, over 80% of that goes to agriculture in, okay, in the Central Valley Project and the State Water Project. But, you know, Gene, there's a lot of numbers that have been flying around,
yes,
here in the valley. It tends to confuse people.
Right.
And I think that there's a concerted effort to create the impression that the entire valley is in crisis and indeed is being reverted to a dust bowl, as they put it. Now, Lester Snow is the director of the California Department of Water Resources and certainly has been a friend of agribusiness for many years, is no radical environmentalist. He traveled with the governor down to Mendota last week and was asked by a TV newsman how much water is actually being made available to people in the Central Valley Project. Which I should, for readers who aren't familiar, the Central Valley Project is from Redding to Bakersfield and covers both the Sacramento Valley and the San Joaquin Valley. Water deliveries are actually at about 80% of normal. He also, this is Lester Snow talking now, not me, Lester Snow, the director of the Department of Water Resources, says that Westlands actually has about 86% of its normal water supply available. Now, there's no question that they've been cut back to about 15% on their Delta supplies. However, they are able to purchase water on the open market, and they have access to groundwater, and they have access to what they call carryover. If there's water that they didn't use last year, they can claim those credits. So, you know, people need to realize that there are irrigation districts in this valley that are getting almost a completely normal supply of water. In the Fryant unit, the Class 1 water, which is the contracts that are pretty much guaranteed water supply, about 90% of their water supply is going to be delivered this year. The exchange, so-called exchange contractors, which are just north of the Westlands, 240,000 acres of land, it's four irrigation districts, they get 100% of their water this year. I think the Fresno Irrigation District, which gets a lot of its water from the Kings River, they are at near normal. So, you know, I tell people when they say that the valley's turning into a dust bowl, I say, get in your car and drive around. Drive up the east side, or and on the west side, there's no question some fields have been idled. And we need some government aid to help farmers who are really struggling. But one of the things I'd like to talk about today, Steve, is our definition of a farmer. What is a farmer? And I'd like to just make reference here to a Wall Street Journal article from a couple of years ago, because the number one commodity in this valley right now in the last two decades has become almonds. Over 600,000 acres in the San Joaquin Valley, about 750,000 acres in the state. And let me just read a couple of paragraphs from the Wall Street Journal article from 2 years ago. Greg Hostetler is a real estate developer who builds subdivisions in California's Central Valley. But the past few years, he has gone nuts. To be precise, Mr. Hostetler has been building a sideline in Almonds, spending $60 million to buy and plant 4,500 acres of trees since 2000. Mr. Hostetler isn't the only newcomer jumping into California's almond game, where orchards now stretch from Red Bluff in the north to Bakersfield in the south. In the past few years, doctors, lawyers, pension fund managers, pro football Hall of Famers, including TV analyst John Madden, have snapped up farmland in the state to plant almonds as a result of worldwide demand. And the growth of the industry was 11% just between 2001 and 2006. Monterey restaurant owner Dominic Mercurio says everyone knows that almonds are a great investment. Now, while some investors have been lured to almonds because of agricultural tax breaks, the almond has become very popular in the last few years because of the high-protein diets such as Atkins and South Beach. Yeah. But the point here is that we all have an image in our brain of the family farm that was passed down from grandpa to dad to the current farmer. By the way, the average age of an average farmer in this valley is now well into his 60s. So we're picturing the old American Gothic, the guy with the pitchfork and the overalls. But in fact, you've got investment companies, you've got large corporate farming operations moving into the valley. And so you've got billionaires like Stuart Resnick, who just bought the 12,000, and 2 years ago bought the 12,000-acre Columbia Ranch in Madera County. So, you know, it's not all little small family farmers on the ropes. If we're going to build billions of dollars in water projects, we're going to be aiding corporate farmers, non-farming people who invest in agriculture, and even if they lose money, they can write it off for their other enterprises. Well, they harm the traditional family farm in the valley, who I think both Steve and I wholeheartedly support.
Right. I'd like to invite listeners to call in if you have a listener comment. The number is 559-266-8888. We're speaking with Lloyd Carter and Steve Hayes. The subject, obviously, is water. We were talking about the small family farmer whose image has been used, literally used, by this public relations firm to conjure up something that is not so. The real family farmers I think they're supporting are not really family farmers, but large agribusiness people. Steve.
Yeah, I'd like to approach the issue of water in our valley in a different way. I agree with what Lloyd has been talking about. I've been managing about $1 million in funds from state of California. And so I've had an opportunity to get to better acquainted with the plumbing of California. And I think one of the things that we need to do is to be less dependent on water coming through the Delta and down the California Aqueduct and the Delta Mendota Canal. We need to start talking about what's called regional self-sufficiency. And instead of talking about flood control, which has its connotations associated with it, is talk about flood water management. That's why the Tulare Lake Basin, in using a natural lake bed rather than millions of cubic feet of concrete in a beautiful canyon area of the upper San Joaquin, and only gaining the benefit from the San Joaquin, here we can utilize those flood waters for beneficial use from four rivers. Not only the San Joaquin River, but the Kings, the Tule, the Cahuilla, and Kern. Even the Kern. Historically, the Kern even flowed ultimately into the Tulare Lake Basin. If we look at systemic issues and the issues of unemployment, but take a systematic approach, looking at where and how we store water, how we utilize it, whether it's surface and natural systems, groundwater recharging and the opportunities there. CalFed, for example, in its own studies have indicated that it costs about $10,000 an acre foot to produce storage in the traditional way. groundwater storage could be less than $2,000. Tulare Lake restoration and doing it in a way that also enhances the environmental benefits for fisheries, for waterfowl, and other wildlife, the benefits are what are called priceless. The other aspect that I like to share is I've been working with information from EDD, State of California Employment Development Department, and some of the information, and unemployment has been systemic. It's been high in the valley historically. Mendota, yes, they are at 41%, and I think it may have dropped to 38%, but they're their average unemployment rate has been 28.5% over the last close to 10 years. And the lowest that unemployment has been in Mendota, which is the poster child community, is 19%.
Steve, I'd like to interrupt you because I think we have a call, a caller on the line. Is that correct? Caller, you are on the air. What is your question?
Thank you. This is Larry. I've been to several of when Lloyd has talked or panels or whatever, and it's always between environmentalists and farmers, and I'm a little disturbed as a resident of the city that the earth dwellers in our water system aren't represented there. And then we're now putting in meters in my parking strip, and I'm my neighbors and I talking about meters because we don't purposely waste water about how it runs off when we irrigate our parking strip, but even that goes into the drain basin. But sprawl is the real issue here. Not making our demand for water that doesn't appear to be there.
Larry, you're breaking up. Are you on a cell phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay, maybe you could go stand in a place where the signal is a little more powerful.
No, we couldn't get there. We couldn't hear your last couple of sentences, Larry.
I was saying that we're putting in water meters to save water for whom? People who are going to be urban users because of sprawl, or people converting rangeland into irrigated crops that demand 3 acre feet of water. These guys put this land in without environmental impact, and it seems like it's having a lot of impact on our water. So how do we stop the sprawl? That's the real issue, I think. That's the real business of the valley, in my opinion, is sprawl, whether it's agriculture or shipping water out in cheese or almonds or building more houses for the Bay Area, so they can commute by high-speed rail back to the Bay Area. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll respond to that, and then, Steve, if you want to add a comment. Well, there's no question that I think that the figure is we're chewing up about 90 acres of prime farmland in this valley a day, although in conversion to urban uses, although I'm sure that that's slowed down when the bottom fell out of the economy here in the last year. But prime farmland is disappearing. But Larry, I recognize that people are very passionate about water meters and that reasonable people can disagree on that issue. But I have to tell you that water usage in Fresno is one of the highest in the state of California where we are unmetered, and it is unquestionable that meters make people be more conscious of conserving water. And the analogy that's always used, and I think it's a very good one, is that if you didn't have your electricity metered, you'd run people would run all the lights, they'd run the air conditioning 24 hours a day. Right. So there is no question in my mind that meters, however an unnecessary evil they seem to be to some people, are going to slow down the daily per-person usage of in Fresno, because as it stands now, we're one of the highest in the state, and I find it a little hypocritical on the part of the city of Fresno if, in fact, our farmers are in crisis and we're having a drought in this region. Fresno has not issued any kind of a mandatory water rationing, war-type footing. If we're in a water war, one of the enemies is drought itself, which is very low water years. The city, if they, in fact, are in alliance with our farmers, the city needs to put its money where its mouth is and start imposing some harsh restrictions. I'll tell one little anecdote. I had a gentleman call me today from who lives out in Woodward Park in a very nice area, and because some of his neighbors water their lawns too much, a lot of water runs off the street and down into the gutters where it's wasted, which we all see that in Fresno every day in the summertime, including in front of City Hall. And he wanted to put up a retaining wall, and he estimated that it would capture that water so it would percolate back into the ground instead of going into the drains. And he got fierce resistance from his affluent neighbors for putting up this retaining wall because they have a very hyper homeowners association out there, even though the city fully agreed with him that it was a water-saving measure. So we need to do a lot to educate the public.
Exactly.
Of the very simplest of things. We all have to take personal responsibility. Don't let your sprinklers run for an hour. And there's many things we can do.
I think we have another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air. What is your question?
Hello?
Hello. Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah, I know Steve Hayes. I've worked with him for many years on the San Joaquin River Trail. I live up in the foothills near him. First off, the drought is over. The next 3 years are going to be above average. So we should be preparing for floods. Second point is everybody should read Cadillac Desert by Mike Reisner.
Mark Reisner.
Yeah, then they'd know a little bit about this state and the water. Should be limited to 960 acres water delivery. Especially on the west side, that shouldn't even be farmed. They poison the land over there when they overwater. The selenium comes up. I've worked over there. I know this. And number three, there's more solutions to all the water problems than there are problems. I have a simple solution for returning the salmon back above all the dams. It doesn't include tearing dams down. And I want to talk to Steve face to face when I get a chance, because it's a good plan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be happy to do that.
Well, good. I'll give you my name and phone number, but off the air.
Okay, you can, you can do that. Thank you so much. Makes me feel good knowing that someone might have a solution. Thank you. Is there, I believe we have one more caller on the air. Caller, you're on the air. What is your question?
I just have a question. I commute from San Francisco from work there to Fresno, and there's sort of a disassociation of the people there with the people out here. I noticed, especially with the conversation going on now about the value of water. And my question is, what is your take on... over there, there's a big concern about the preservation of certain species of fish. They're more concerned about that. Over here, it's farmland, it's agriculture. Is there a medium ground to all this talk? Is there a sort of a compromise in this whole issue?
Well, I certainly hope so, and I know Steve would feel the same way. We think there is some middle ground. Unfortunately, emotions are running high lately, and it seems to be more heat than light that's being shed. But yeah, there are a number of suggestions being planned, some of them very controversial, and I believe are likely to trigger off an even fiercer water war. And of course, the main one is the peripheral canal, which would funnel Northern California water coming down the Sacramento River or completely around the delta and to the pumps, and the arguments made that this would actually help the fishery, and not by coincidence, it would also help Western San Joaquin Valley agribusiness and Southern California developers. And the other two highly controversial proposals are two multi-billion dollar dams, one at Temperance Flat near Millerton, and one at called the so-called Sites Reservoir in the Sacramento Valley. Even were those projects to be approved, the peripheral canal would be at least 10 years away, and probably the dams would be 10 to 15 million years away from completion. Now, I need to say that the dams are predicated upon the premise that, in fact, we'll continue to have occasional big water years and that the climate change predictions are not accurate, and then we're not going into a longer dry spell. I would point out to people that tree ring studies in California indicate that about 1,000 years ago we had a 220-year drought. So if any, and you know, this drought here, and whether you call it a drought, even that is debatable if we're having a drought right now. I know we're having a lot of mismanagement of our water supplies. My specific example would be the State Water Board has issued permits for 5 times as much water as actually exists in a normal year. So everybody that's in the bucket line to get water, there's that's like a movie theater that has 200 seats, and they've sold 1,000 tickets. That's our dilemma. Steve, do you want to address the issues of the dams or yeah. Common ground, I think?
Yeah, it's common ground. And, you know, there's been a lot of effort to outreach within the ag community, and then you have environmental organizations that are outside the valley, as the gentleman was describing. What's very interesting is in the Delta, on the other side of the ESA issue and the Delta smelt as an indicator species, is the lineup of water agencies. The Central Delta Water Agency and the South Delta Water Agency have filed lawsuits essentially indicating or arguing that it's important to uphold the ESA. I don't think some interests want that word to get out, that their concern is the collapse of the Delta and the fact that agriculture, 500,000 acres, $2 billion, and all those communities would wither away. I want to try to bring this back to two issues that we're confronted with that we're not too many people are aware of. One is groundwater depletion or overdrafting. And the other is Salina Canal are bringing in water, salt water. So it's really imperative to assure that the Delta will not collapse, that it's totally brackish water. Historically, in other dry years, back in 1931, for example, salt water from the ocean made it all the way to Stockton. I don't think we want to make that kind of mistake. One study back in the 90s by DWR estimated that there was about 700,000 tons of salt water coming into the San Joaquin Valley. A more recent estimate is 15 million tons. All you have to do is look over at what was called the Fertile Crescent over in the Middle East and see fast forward into the future. Mm-hmm. Well, if I may.
Sure. I'd like to just break for 1 minute and invite more listener call-ins. 266-8888 is the number if you have a comment on the water. Are we in a drought? What about fish versus people? What do you need to know? We have two water experts with us, Lloyd Carter and Steve Hayes. So again, the numbers are 26 area code 559-268-88. Steve, back to you.
Thank you. The groundwater depletion or overdraft has been estimated in the past, again, by Department of Water Resources at 1 million acre feet per annum in both up in Sacramento Valley as well as down here. I've just received some preliminary information. It's looking at the state water plan, and they have a category called groundwater, net groundwater, and it's a factor of 5. Not 1 million, but it's in more in the range of 4 to 5 million acre feet per annum. That is not sustainable. And that's part of our water budget that people are not aware of, and it's really borrowing well into the future on a non-sustainable basis and needs to be addressed.
Okay.
It's a lot of doom and gloom and finger-pointing and blame, et cetera. Gene, let's talk about somewhere here in the valley where they're actually doing things right.
Yes.
And that's Kern County.
Okay.
Kern County is 20 years ahead of Fresno County in planning for their water future. As some of the listeners may know, that there's a Kern County Water Bank southwest of the city of Bakersfield. It occupies about 20,000 acres. And if you go to the Kern Water Bank website, kwb.org, they have a frequently asked questions section, which is enormously interesting. They've got about 7,000 acres of recharge basins down there in the Kern Water Bank, and they can recharge up to 72,000 acre-feet of water per month.
Wow.
And after a year of continuous recharge like that, when they start to fill it up, the recharge rate slows down, of course, but they can still be as much as 30,000 acre a month. Now, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago, Steve, when they were spilling water over the top of Fryant Dam, mm-hmm. which, by the way, they've been mm-hmm. doing the last 2-3 weeks, and let me get back to that about what's going on at Fryant at the moment. They were sending a lot of water down the Fryant-Kern Canal to Bakersfield to the Arvin Edison Irrigation District. And this is, by the way, is one of the arguments for Temperance Flat Dam, but they were spilling water from Fryant because the irrigation districts couldn't take it, except for Arvin Edison in connection with their water banking program, and that was water that was worth $2 million a day. So Kern County does it right.
Yeah.
And they've got a storage capacity in the Kern Water Bank of 1.5 million acre-feet. Which is what, Steve, more than the Temperance Flat Dam would hold, and they're doing it at a fraction of the cost.
Lloyd, we have Lloyd and Steve. We have another call. Caller, you're on the air. What is your question? Hello. Yes, caller. I guess we've lost. We do have one more call. Caller.
Vicki Fouts in Coarse Gold.
Oh, hi, Vicki. How are you? What's your question?
I'm wondering about the Fresno River. Through Madera, you never see any water in the Fresno River, and you never hear anybody talk about that. And I was wondering what you could tell me about that.
Well, Steve's our guy on that one.
Fresno River is fully appropriated. Every drop's being utilized and stored locally, and it just doesn't make its way to the confluence with the San Joaquin. Myself, personally, I think it could be used as a natural system, and the hope is that when there are floodwaters that it could flow past the storage facilities through the town of Madera, and make its way to the San Joaquin River, help recharge the groundwater in those localities, and provide environmental benefit and recreational benefit as well.
So is anyone working on getting the Fresno River to flow past Hensley?
Well, part of that, of course, depends on nature. If the lake was full, obviously they would have to let the water go down, and in flood years, that might be the case on occasion. But you got to talk to God about that one, because he's in charge of how much water falls on the mountains.
Right, and the other point associated with that, that's the difference between what's called flood control versus flood water management. If you're looking at flood water management, you're not just looking at it in traditional ways that you're trying to hold it and keep it from expanding out, say, into a floodplain and with establishing setback levees. We've got a lot of plumbing now. It's much easier today to manage those floodwaters for beneficial use.
Lloyd,
thank
is there?
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for your call, Vicki. Again, the listener call-in line is area code 559-266-8888. I have a question for Lloyd, and then I have a question for Steve. Lloyd, you mentioned what the Kern County people are doing and how well they're doing it. What else are they doing? If anything.
Well, they certainly want to see as much water come down the state aqueduct on the west side of the valley as they can, obviously, for their farming areas. But the other thing that's happening in Kern County, quite frankly, is that they are strategically located geographically to be a switching staging area for water that goes over the Tehachapi to Southern California. So they are working out deals with Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, which is a big water wholesaler, and other agencies to store Metropolitan's water in their groundwater bank. You know, it's useful to think of it just like a bank where you put your money. Well, Metropolitan has water coming down. They store it in the groundwater bank in Kern County, and they pull it out when they need it in dry years, and Kern County Water Bank charges them. The problem with that is some of the groundwater banking programs in Kern County have been taken over by Beverly Hills billionaire Stuart Resnick because, as I've said for many years, water is becoming the new cash crop.
Yes.
And
yes.
In fact, there are people in this valley and in the Sacramento Valley who are deciding to idle their land this year because they can make a heck of a lot more money selling it to farmers. Now, Westside farmers in the CVP may pay $70-$80 an acre foot for their water. And Yuba County, for example, is offering to sell water to stressed out western San Joaquin Valley farmers for $250 to $300 an acre foot. And indeed, there are water transfers and sales going on. I'm sad to say that some farmers, quote, and I put the word farmer in quote, who've got into the water marketing business are gouging their neighbors who kind of have a gun to their head if they've planted permanent crops. If you've got an orchard, you've got to water it, and you'll have to pay, in some cases, extortionate prices for your water.
Yeah, I'm thinking, Steve, you know, you're talking about wonderful things. Lloyd is about about restoring water and good things that are going on. What if we restored the Tulare Lake? How would we do it? Where would the water come from? And who owns the lake right now, the lake basin?
All right. Well, the lake basin itself, or the lake bottom, is J.G. Boswell and Company. He's probably the largest landowner in respect to it. But there's about 12 landowners and about a population of 60 in about 500 square mile area. We're talking about restoring about 10%. If we restore 10% of the lake bottom, and there's lots of infrastructure there already, canal system throughout it, that would be twice the storage of the largest facility that's being proposed by DWR and the Bureau of Reclamation on the upper San Joaquin River. At Temperance Flat, it's 1.3 million acre feet. 10% of Tulare Lake is 2.5 million acre feet. The other aspect is you can expand it based on a wet year versus a normal or dry year. And that you can look at not just one, but four rivers. And instead of doing flood control in the traditional way, keeping it up in the foothills and those reservoirs, you can allow that to be managed, reoperate those reservoirs, let that water come down, do restoration along those waterways. There's a wonderful organization called the Tulare Lake Wildlife Partners. And all they need is to add water. And this is a great opportunity. The other aspect is the Kern County Water Agency is more of a privatization and marketing of our water under state constitution. And my thoughts are, rather than allowing what's called 215, or what would be floodwaters going down the San Joaquin or through the Frank Kern Canal at the terminus there at Arvin Edison, Semi-Tropic, as well as Kern County Water Agency, is put it into the lake. Put our water into the lake. Keep it here. Regionalize it. Work with the west side. Move water from the aqueduct into the lake as well, the California aqueduct, in wet years when it makes sense. And instead of marketing that water for to exact more money than what you invest into it, and giving an example, there was a great article in the Contra Costa Times associated with Kern Water Agency, in which they were dipping into what's called the Environmental Restoration Program and the Environmental Water Account. That EWA, they were getting 5 to 10 times the money for what they paid for that water, which essentially cost them next to nothing. If they were selling back to the people of California the water cost plus, that makes sense. But they were actually privatizing it and gaining more of the taxpayers' money than what was warranted or justified.
Let me just add to that briefly, sure. Gene. What's going on in the water world is profiteering and privatization. You know, water is gold in California, and it's in the public treasury. People aren't aware that the public literally gives away millions of acre feet of water every year through the federal irrigation projects and the state water projects, mostly for agriculture, but also for urban use. The people get nothing. They give that water away through the water rights systems. But they're similar to Enron and the energy scamming that we had in California a few years ago.
Right.
People have learned how to game the system with water. What Steve points out is a specific example of that. The environmental water account has become scandalous. And there are other situations where, poor farmer who truly needs some water for his orchard is forced to pay extortionist prices.
Yeah. You know, I would say to everybody out there, and this, you know, we could talk for hours about this. You, too, have so much information. I would recommend everybody read Cadillac Desert. That, you know, it shows where the land grab and the water grab began, and it's just this amazing book, kind of leads us to where we are now.
Well, it takes us up to 1986, so in the last 23 years, I guarantee you a lot has happened.
Maybe somebody needs to write a supplement.
A sequel.
Lloyd, that's your assignment.
Uh-oh.
We're going to go to a musical break and then have a short interview with someone who's appearing in Fresno this evening and tomorrow. I'd like to thank Lloyd Carter and Steve Hayes. You've been amazing with your information and your expertise about water. Thank you so much. And, you know, I would say to the public, always question what you read in the paper about water, except for the Community Alliance, of course, which has the straight story. And don't forget, Steve Hayes and Lloyd Carter both have articles in the Community Alliance coming up in the next month. You can visit the website www.lloydgcarter.com, lloydgcarter.com, and you can get a hold of Steve Hayes, www.sjvwlf.org.